Hello and welcome back to episode 2 in this information podcast about the Osteoarthritis NICE guidelines. My name is Mel Brook. I'm the Patient and Public Engagement Programme Director for BIRD. And in this episode, my guest is once again Mr. Christopher Marty, who is going to continue to talk us through the new osteoarthritis guidelines developed by NICE. So, Chris, thanks for coming back. Let's pick up on the rest of the guidelines chat for the osteoarthritis podcast. So we've got sort of two other areas of the guidelines that came out last year. Shall we talk about what they're saying currently about medication? So the drugs, the pharmaceuticals management. Is there anything different? Yeah. What's coming out?
Yeah, well, different or something that is more highlighted is around the drug treatment options. So again, I'd said earlier on that the non-pharmacological options are certainly the mainstay of treatment, but they do talk about that if pharmacological treatments are needed to manage osteoarthritis, again, they need to be alongside the non-pharmacological treatment. So we cannot just be taking medication on its own, because that's not going to help. And it needs to support therapeutic exercise. So again, we sometimes think when we're talking about medications, it might be helpful to help to reduce the pain in order to engage more with the exercises, with the weight loss, with other things there.
Yeah.
But also to be mindful that we have to use the lowest effective dose for the shortest period of time.
We hear that a lot. Yeah.
We hear it a lot. And actually people, you know, we do forget that, you know, drugs are powerful things. And actually we do need to make sure we're being safe, because drugs will have interactions with other things, and you might have comorbidities or things that we need to be mindful of. So we'll talk about that in a moment. But the first line of treatment, and it says there is some good evidence for this, is topical, so like a gel or cream, a topical non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug, or an NSAID, to people with knee osteoarthritis, for instance. But also consider topical non-steroidals for people with osteoarthritis that affects other joints. So there are lots out there, so I'm not going to say...
No, we won't mention brands.
I was going to say that you need to buy, but it's a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory gel, something that you can rub in to the skin, being mindful of the precautions on the packets, and obviously discussion with your healthcare professional. But it's thought that that is a good first line treatment.
And these are things that people can buy over the counter, aren't they, as well?
Yes. Yeah. So over the counter medications are things that they can buy from pharmacies, from supermarkets. And ultimately, yeah, that is usually the first line. They do tend to be stronger, stronger doses of these, which may then need to be prescribed. So again, you could start with the over the counter, build up to the stronger doses. But then it says if these topical medicines are ineffective or unsuitable, they could then consider an oral tablet non-steroidal.
Right. So
rubbing into the skin, to the area, is the first line, probably then going up to the dose of that. And then if that's still not effective, considering the next line, which would be oral. However, that comes with a huge caveat, because ultimately we need to, again, remember the demographics. So anyone over 45 could be diagnosed with osteoarthritis, but the incidence does increase as we get older. But as we get older, then sometimes there are other comorbidities that can come to play. Our general health in terms of things like kidney function, renal function might slowly deteriorate over time.
Yeah.
And so some of these drugs have potential side effects. And particularly with these non-steroidals, we need to be mindful of gastrointestinal, so stomach upsets, kidney problems, liver, and then cardiovascular, heart-related toxicity. So we need to be mindful that you're speaking to a prescribing professional when you've done that, when you do this. I've recently passed my prescribing course, and when I talk to patients, age is a factor. And actually, for instance, over 65 was what I was taught was actually we need to be particularly mindful as well when we get over 65 into our 70s, because these risks go up. So it's not to say you categorically can't, but there may be some risk factors as well. So people who are pregnant, for instance, you know, you then can't offer those sorts of medications for that. And you also then might have to add another medication alongside that, which might be protective of the stomach. So those are called proton pump inhibitors, or PPI. And so again, for those with arthritis, taking an oral non-steroidal, then you might want to be considering taking that alongside it.
Yeah. And we're talking, just to mention again, we're talking about chronic conditions where people might be feeling that they need these things a longer term. We're not talking about when you just buy tablets for headache and then the headache's gone after 2 days. So it's being careful, isn't it? And it's taking advice and making sure you understand the risks. It's all of that, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. People take an ad hoc, not too much. Mm. You know, this is why it comes back to the lowest effective dose. So
shortest time.
Yeah, the side effects are definitely linear with a dose and a dose dependent nature. So if you're doing high doses for long periods of time, the risks would go up. But interesting then, so that's what we talked about from an anti-inflammatory point of view, you know, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. But when we think of pain relief, we generally think of things like paracetamol or weak opioids, so things like codeine or cocodamol. Yeah. And actually, NICE have said that we should not routinely offer these unless they're only used infrequently for short-term pain relief.
So similar to the NSAIDs then, in terms of a tablet, just for the shortest amount of time and only if necessary?
I would say different to the NSAIDs in this. So yes, for the tablets of NSAIDs, so short period of time. But for this, it's saying we don't want to routinely offer it. So the first person that comes in, say, I'm struggling with this, what I would routinely offer is a topical non-steroidal. But I wouldn't routinely say, right, can you please take some paracetamol or
codeine.
Codeine or cocodamol. Yeah. But they do say unless it's used infrequently for just a short period of time. So again, you might think somebody who's got known osteoarthritis and then has had a specific pain flare for a short period of time, they might think, right, I do now need something a little bit stronger to help settle it. And when I say a little bit stronger, it might be just starting some regular paracetamol for that. But also, they only would go for these options if all other pharmacological treatments are contraindicated, not tolerated, or ineffective. So essentially saying, if you can't take any, you know, so you've tried the topical gels and then it's not worked, different strengths of that, it's not worked, you're then saying it's not safe for you to take ibuprofen, for instance, as oral non-steroidal drug, then they'll say, right, we could consider these other treatments because we still want to try and manage the patient's symptoms, because that then helps them stay active and do the other treatment methods. But it's quite tricky when it comes to pain relief, because we don't want to escalate that too much. And again, don't want to become reliant on different medications. We know the opioids, for instance, the codeines, and then going up to things like the tramadol. These are not recommended for these types of conditions. And they do come with a wealth of other issues often associated. But we need to explain to people with osteoarthritis that there really is no strong evidence of the benefit, for instance, of these medications. Okay. So I just need to say, last thing really is, because I always get asked about different supplements like glucosamine.
Yeah.
And again, so it's saying not necessarily offering glucosamine or strong opioids again to manage osteoarthritis, just because there is no strong evidence again for the benefit. So oftentimes we go on evidence, don't we, to say this is weighted favorably or not. And so that's what we have to move forward with. But like we said, we need to also be thinking, will anything do harm to me? And that's what we also have to think about, other drug options or supplements. And I do direct people as well then to more up-to-date advice as well alongside this with charities like Versus Arthritis. You know, you can go onto their website, because one thing we haven't mentioned is things like capsaicin creams or other things that might help. And so it's something that people can look into and then trial, as long as they also feel it's safe to do so and it's not doing any harm to them.
Yeah, it's a good shout to say go and look at these things, because organisations like Versus Arthritis do have an awful lot more information on their website that we just can't go down to in detail today.
Mm-hmm. So would this be a good time now to talk about injections?
Yes.
So one of the things that a lot of people say, you know, is so-and-so has, I know somebody who's had an injection for their arthritis, you know, and understandably, when we talk to people about their treatment options, we need to be open and tell people the risks, benefits, alternatives of each treatment. So one of those is joint injections or intra-articular injections. That's what that means. And so there are different types of substances that you can inject, some things you can't inject. So one of the things that NICE have said is we should not be offering intra-articular hyaluronic acid injections to manage osteoarthritis. Now that hyaluron is not something that would be routinely be used in the NHS. In private practice, it may be offered, but it's saying here that they're not wanting to suggest offering that. But what they do consider is corticosteroid injections.
Right.
And they've said that specifically when other pharmacological treatments are ineffective or unsuitable, and again, to support therapeutic exercise. So I can say, Mel, that I'm an injecting physiotherapist. So I do give joint injections with corticosteroids and local anaesthetic to people's knee joints, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And it is definitely a treatment option, and it needs to be an escalation of treatment. So like,
yes,
I said, would not be first line in osteoarthritis. It needs to be really considered as well. So we have to think, again, is it alongside supporting other methods of treatment? You know, how many times has somebody had an injection? Because what we don't want is to necessarily be injecting, and somebody having multiple injections every year. We need to look at the benefits. So people I inject, I will actually contact them 6 to 8 weeks later, check in how was the injection, did it help, did you have any adverse effects? And it's for me, it's trying to build a picture to see how long did the injection support you for, and that's I think where some clinicians are sometimes, you know, not happy to repeat injections. So if you had an injection and it only gave you relief for a couple of weeks, that isn't really what I would call a significant result benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't actually want to quote on record the benefit people get, because it is varied. But I think it's certainly an option to consider. And we need to explain to people straight away that this isn't a cure. It often can provide short-term relief. Actually, NICE do say most relief is short-term, 2 to 10 weeks. So less than 3 months is not a huge amount of time, but again, it might be appropriate for the right patient at the right time.
So the guidelines are saying basically don't give injections unless there's a really strong case for it, and don't give them frequently. It's not a repeating treatment. It's maybe a one-off here and there, but only if it's been assessed that everything else isn't working.
Yeah, I would say that is a good summary, Mel, because I think we know it's a treatment option. This is a debilitating condition, and people can really struggle with osteoarthritis. And so we need to make sure that we're not withholding treatments that might be helpful.
Mm.
But if I can say that, for instance, I've seen people who have read through their notes going back 6-7 years and they've had multiple injections. And then when I've questioned that, you know, saying, so what's your understanding of that? First of all, some people say, well, I didn't know. I assumed I just need to come back for an injection. So that tells me they've maybe not had as much emphasis on the education around this and what are the risks and benefits, because there are risks associated with injections.
Mm-hmm.
And also it tells me that sometimes I see patients who are then becoming reliant on the injection. And again, you know, I've had people say, oh, I just want an injection because I'm going on holiday next week, you know, and actually, have you been doing other things? And then I speak to them, they've not tried the topical non-steroidals on there, you know, they've not tried alternatives. And one thing that's not mentioned, but hot thermotherapy, so hot or cold compress, that can really give people some relief. And if they do that periodically, it might be something that's helpful. So yeah, I think I'm mindful that it's definitely an option. I do inject people, and people do get variable result, but we just need to be mindful. And this is, I'll talk about the treatment decision tool in a minute, because I think that might be a good way to go when we talk about other treatments such as operations or joint replacements as well.
Yeah, absolutely. While you mention that, is that something we should just touch on before you go through that treatment decision making? What is the NICE guidelines saying about things like having an operation, having a joint replacement? What are those current thinkings? Well, the guideline, the framework for how you should be treating it.
Yeah, so we need to think about considering people, referring people for hip, knee or shoulder osteoarthritis. That's what the guidelines, particularly the big three that they're particularly focusing on. If their symptoms, so pain, stiffness, their function, but also their progression of their joint deformity. So when we come into this stage of considering surgery, we went and mentioned that x-rays aren't routinely used as diagnostic or even follow-ups, but they are helpful when we are considering escalating treatment. So at some point, from being diagnosed without an x-ray, most likely, and then over X amount of years, again, some people, we need to say as well, there will be a subset of people who do not ever need to have surgery. Because I think that's something to remind people, that a lot of people sometimes think, you know, will this end up with a knee replacement, you know, or will this end up with a hip replacement? And so we need to be mindful that actually not everybody will need to go and have a joint replacement surgery. So that's the first thing to say. But really, it's if those symptoms, pain, stiffness, function, and then the progression of their joint deformity is substantially impacting their quality of life, and that non-surgical management, so the exercise, the weight loss, the pain relief, is now ineffective or unsuitable. So again, as a first contact physiotherapist, I'm privileged to have the ability to not only diagnose people with osteoarthritis, quest x-rays as I need to, inject if I need to, but also refer into secondary care orthopedics if I need to. I'm really looking at the whole picture, and it's a shared decision making with the patient. And then we're using everything at hand to try and make this decision, you know, so the x-ray, the things they've done, their quality of life, lots and factors, and then other support tools like, you know, you have questionnaires like the Oxford knee or hip scores that can help better quantify somebody's impact on their life. Again, if you can see that it's their treatment is escalating, so they're coming back more often. Previously they came back and didn't come back for years, and then they come back again, but now they're having multiple reappearances at the surgery because of their symptoms. It tells you that things are escalating, and actually if an x-ray as well alongside that is showing more considerable joint changes, then that together you can then start to consider referring on. But it is key to say, Mel, that we do have local guidelines as well for orthopaedic referrals. So I'm close to Bath, but I'm over in Bristol. So we've got Bristol, North Somerset and South Gloucestershire. We have our own local guidelines about who we can refer and when. And one of those things is that, have they gone and done, for instance, a very formalized structured exercise program like the Escape Pain module, you know, that Escape Pain program. Just making sure that everybody has really exhausted those options and really ensure that they've tried everything, because knee surgery, hip surgery, it's still invasive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really useful to sort of put a scenario in for that if we can. So it could be that it's appropriate. Maybe somebody's, you know, working occupation means they're on their feet a lot. They've had OA in the knee, the knee's deteriorated over time. That they're not being able to function, that, you know, everything else has been tried, and that might flag that kind of procedure. Yeah. But we're talking about having gone down a path for someone and then supporting them to be able to move forward, aren't we?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. And so, again, if I think about some of the patients that I've thought about who have referred, like you said, yeah, seen them more often, they've got quite considerable, because they do have to have quite considerable joint changes on the x-ray. And then again, I've assessed them because they need to have a clinical assessment, seen them multiple times. You can see that there's perhaps the joint has started to change in appearance. It's very restricted, very painful. All of these things taken together, with treatments becoming less effective or ineffective, then means we should be considering onward referral. But again, we need to think, about if it's right for the patient and if they want to have surgery. That's another thing. You know, I speak to people and say, actually, I really wouldn't want to have surgery. It's not something I want to do. Or I've seen somebody who's had one joint replaced and then they've come back with another joint, the same joint, you know, say their other hip is painful. And actually they say, I don't want to have that based on the first experience. Or conversely, some people say, no, the replacement did help and I would have it again. So it's all person to person. But one of the things I did want to talk about was this decision tool that I really do signpost people to.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. Talk us through that, Chris.
Yeah, so NHS England have, I believe it was the end of last year, released, I think it was 8 what they call decision tools about different conditions. 2 of those are related to knee osteoarthritis and hip osteoarthritis. The reason why I like this is because it goes through, and we can obviously send people a link for this afterwards, Mel, but it goes through, okay, what is osteoarthritis? And then personalize it to say, how is my osteoarthritis and what treatment options are there for me? So not only does this make sure that people know all the treatment options open to them, it also gives people, informs patients of, okay, I know at different stages I might need different treatment options, but also it shows quite clearly if, oh, I haven't really maximized that, you know, I've actually jumped over that step. And so you can print it out and you can write, you know, you can tick different boxes and annotate on different parts of the pages. And it says things like, you know, what's important to me? So thinking about your arthritis on a scale, you can say, you know, is my pain unmanageable? To how much does it interfere with my sleep? Am I having more bad days than good days? And you can better quantify this. And I would say you can fill this out, bring it into your consultation, speak to your healthcare professional. And then it looks about things I can do to help myself. It talks about those other aids, like the walking aids, like manual therapy. And then it actually escalates and talks about tablets, creams, injections, surgery, different types of surgery. And one of the things we said was, we'd said total knee replacements, for instance, as a joint surgery. But for instance, if we take the knee, there are 3 compartments to the knee. It's behind the kneecap, the inside and the outside. And some people have only one compartment that is particularly affected by osteoarthritis. And so for those people, they might need a partial knee replacement. So there are things to consider. Again, what I like is it talks about potential benefits and risks of each of these as well. And it actually quantifies it based on out of every 100 people, for instance. So I could say here that in the research studies, how many people's pain got better when they did nothing, for instance. So one of the choices is, I don't want to do anything. I just want to see how it goes. And it said that around 21 to 47 people out of 100 had less pain taking placebo dummy pills compared to those who didn't. But again, it's got different treatments, again, so exercise, creams, and it really shows what the evidence says as to how effective it may be. So it's a really useful decision tool. The thing I like it for is because it really, you know, informs patients and also reminds them that actually I'm not here as a professional to dictate to anybody. You know, I'm here because I'm passionate about supporting people's health. I've got a certain degree of knowledge, obviously, and expertise in the area. But actually, my job is to make sure the patient feels in control, informed, and we can have a shared decision on how to go forward with their health.
I agree. So it's as much about patient choices as anything else. And that sounds like a really useful tool that really goes through everything we've talked about today. So we'll put those links in the show notes as well. We'll try and find a link to the decision tools through the NHS England website. But I mean, you know, people can go and look it up themselves. They don't have to go through our links. I would encourage people to go and find these things.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's been really enjoyable to talk about all of this today, Mel. And actually, I think even offline, we were saying there's so much that we could go into here. So this hopefully is helpful alongside those other podcasts that Bird have produced as well.
I think it's going to go down really well. Thanks so much, Chris.
You're welcome. I'm really, really delighted to be able to be on this podcast today. And if I can, my take-home message really is to remind people that osteoarthritis is much more than a single isolated joint condition. There are many wider factors that need to be considered. It is really and can be really debilitating, but it can be managed and people can be empowered to do that. And I think the treatment needs to be personalized and really targeted. And it seems from the NICE guidelines that the biggest bang for your buck, as it were, is lifestyle modification, weight loss, and physical activity and exercise.
Great summary, Chris.
Thank you.
We're immensely grateful for Chris coming onto the podcast to walk us through these last two episodes about the osteoarthritis NICE guidelines. Thanks so much, Chris. Hopefully we'll speak to him again soon. And just a little reminder to say, don't forget to check our show notes for some of those links mentioned in the podcasts. BIRD are committed to helping patients increase knowledge about rheumatic conditions because we know this can have a really positive impact on living with them. We also have a great focus on enabling people to get involved in rheumatology research to help make sure that new medications and treatments meet the needs of patients. We couldn't do any of this without the help of our volunteers and the support of our donors and sponsors, all of whom we are immensely grateful to. You can sign up to be notified about all our podcasts and our patient engagement research opportunities by joining our mailing list. Just send an email to admin@birdbath.org.uk. The address and links are in the show notes.